Look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities. Forget about...
Hello and welcome to episode 110 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Pachko and Angie Han.
Hi.
Hey, everybody.
So we have a double review for you this week. First, we are going to spend 5 minutes talking about Green Room, and then our big review is going to be of Jungle Book. So first up, Green Room, and that is my movie, surprise, surprise. Here is the IMDb synopsis. After witnessing a murder, a punk rock band is forced into a vicious fight for survival against a group of maniacal skinheads. Yup, that's pretty much one of the best IMDb synopsis we've seen in a while.
It's such a
right?
simple plot.
Two thumbs
it's like
up
hard
for that
to
synopsis.
Fuck up.
Well, and that's kind of the brilliance of the movie, is it's really simple. You know, they see something they should have, and it's about them trying to fight their way out. And it's about the club owner, who's played by Patrick Stewart, trying to not let them get out and basically tell on him and his guys. And the movie comes from director Jeremy Saulnier, and he's the guy who directed Murder Party and Blue Ruin. And this is fantastic. I think I like this more than Blue Ruin. It's much more my speed because I love horror, and this is a brutal movie, so insanely violent, so much gore. So I mean, there's a lot going on in this, but it's actually the only movie I think I gave an A to last year.
Oh wow!
And it's weird because to me, A means perfect, because it's the highest possible rating you could be, and I have a hard time calling a movie perfect. But at the same time, after watching Green Room, like, I didn't want to change a second of it. I didn't want to take a second of it away, and I needed to see it again and again.
I feel like it's not especially deep as a movie, so, like, I guess that, to me, is what I, like, why I'm not, like, saying, oh my god, it's one of my favorite movies of the year. At the same time, though, I feel like, it knows what it's setting out to do, and it achieves all of those goals, like, flawlessly. Like, it's, I mean, so, just like in Blue Ruin, one of the notable things about Green Room is that, like, the main characters aren't, like, action heroes, and, like, even when shit goes down, like, they don't suddenly, like, you know, it's not like in a lot of movies you'll see, like, some kind of response kicks in and suddenly they're just, like, kicking ass and, like, beating people up and being, like, crazy and, like, good at stuff. And, like, this isn't that movie. These people are, like, really horribly outmatched, and, like, things go, like, the way that you would imagine they would in real life. And I really love that.
It makes it really intense. Sorry, that's what I was going to say, is that it feels so grounded in a reality. In my review for Pajiba, I spoke specifically about how, like, in high school, I went to a lot of shows, not at skinhead bars, but in places that remind me of the place we see in the thing, where it's just a hole, and they put music on there. And so, like, I think that they set that place up so realistically, and they set the characters up so realistically, that I felt really embedded. And that's kind of the cool thing, is that even though this movie is so much of it takes place in the green room, but it manages to maintain this sense of excitement and claustrophobia, because there's one way out, which is that one door, and, like, they keep trying to battle their way past people, and like, you know, it's like four 20-somethings who's, like, they're not hardcore. They're just punk fans. And, like, for instance, like, they're made up of, like, Anton Yelchin and Aaliyah Shawkat. They're not tough. So then all of a sudden they're taking on these guys who are, like, prepared for an actual race war.
Yeah, they're like a militia.
Yeah, I mean, they're, like, legit, like, it's, you know, reminded me of American History X, which is basically the extent of what I know about white supremacists is from the movies. But, and Patrick Stewart in this, as, like, the head white supremacist, it's so terrifying, because he's, like, he's so calmly malicious, and, like, he's, like, oh, they need to die, here's how we're gonna do it. And he's so...
Well, that's the cool thing about,
like, he's
that
just
character,
having,
is that he can be calm, because he's just the man in charge. He's ordering these guys around. He isn't some indestructible villain that is, you know, wielding a knife or a gun himself. He's got these really tough guys doing whatever he says for them to do.
And then also in there you have Macon Blair, who plays, like, the right-hand man, who, like, is more about running, like, his deal is running the club. So he's never really had this moment before, and they talk about that a lot, where they're like, you earned your laces tonight and all that shit, because he gets his hands dirty. And watching Macon Blair, who was in Blue Ruin, which, like Perry, I kind of thought was overhyped, honestly. It was really interesting to see the complexity of not just these kids who were terrified, but also these, you know, basically neo-Nazis that you shouldn't, like, that I feel like a lot of filmmakers would just make them, like blanket bad guys, but there's complexities within that group that make it a more complex and interesting movie.
Yeah, it really does. It really does feel like you've just been dropped into this crazy situation, and it's so naturalistic. Like the characters, like from the way that the way that they act and their dialogue and like the conversations they have, it just feels very like you know, they don't do the thing where they like have to explain to each other like exposition, because there's really like not very much exposition here. There's like nothing you really need to know except this is a punk band and they're in a room and they're trying to get out, and that's all you really need to know. And anything else that the movie wants to tell you or that it wants you to see about these people comes through in like naturalistic dialogue, or where people will just kind of like offhandedly mention stuff that you eventually figure out, or it'll just come in like the way that they, you know, the way that they maneuver this situation.
Oh, I just want to throw out also that, because we haven't mentioned her, Imogen Poots is in this, and it's great because it's a very different role than she typically gets. It's not the cute, quirky girl or the sweet love interest or whatever. Like, she's a white supremacist in this, and she's also on this, like, hit list of these guys. So she has to work with the band to try to get out, and I thought she was great. I thought she was by far the strongest thing in the movie.
She's great. She makes a great pair with Anton Yelchin, who I think also did an incredible job of this. I mean, really, everybody did.
Yes,
there isn't a single weakling. Oh my god, he's freaky. He's freaky in this.
Look, it's the kind of movie where we have a hard time picking a favorite thing about it. So
yeah,
that's
but it
up,
is upsetting.
Man.
It's like, but it's a good kind of upsetting where it's like, you know, it's like one of those slasher flicks in that when you watch it with your friends. The writer-director has made such a good job of kind of carving out a story and the possibilities, and like, if you were in the situation, what would you do? And they really explore all those moments. Mm-hmm. So I feel like if you see this with friends afterwards, you could talk about like, okay, now what would you do if you were in that situation? And you can kind of choose your own adventure for how far you'd get.
I will just
what
say
would you
right
do?
I'll just say right now, I'm gonna be the first to die.
Couldn't handle this. I would not have lasted very long.
I'd be the sneaky
I'm
one hiding
aware
in the couch.
I love
that shot.
Yeah. I think I probably would have been the Aaliyah Shawkat character in this. That I was all badass until things started getting really hairy, and then be like, fuck me. Like, I'm just going to leave it at that.
I'd be kind of picture Shawkat. That. All right. So clearly we all love Green Room. So go see that. I mean, really, even though it's April, Green Room will probably be in my top 10 of the year. I'm that confident in it that I will say that.
Also, I want to point out, because some people asked this on my review, it's in limited release this week. I think it's just New York and LA, but then next week's expanding, and then nationwide the week after. So it's coming.
Wide the 29th, so go see it at whatever point it comes to your city. Next up, we've got the wide release for this week, which is The Jungle Book. And Christy, you are going to give us the synopsis for that.
I am. The Jungle Book. The man-cub Mowgli flees the jungle after a threat from the tiger Shere Khan. Guided by Bagheera, the panther, and the bear Baloo, Mowgli embarks on a journey of self-discovery, though he also meets creatures who don't have his best interests at heart. Guys, it's the plot of The Jungle Book, the 1967 animated movie redone by Disney. It was a book by Rudyard Kipling, but watching the movie, they also do song numbers from the 67 version, so it's more a reboot of that. I was doubtful of this movie being good, because even though I think Jon Favreau can be a really amazing director, and I really like his, when he does family friendly stuff, like Zathura, I think is wildly underrated. I was suspicious, because their whole concept was, we're going to take one live action kid, and they cast this newcomer, Neil Seethy, and they're like, we're going to go with him. And then we're just going to surround him in CGI. And I thought, that sounds terrible. You're going to take a kid who's never acted before and surround him with a bunch of, like, rando CGI stuff. It's going to look like a mess, and he's going to be a mess. And I completely undersold. I was wrong. I was totally wrong. I found this movie to be completely absorbing, wildly fun. And I think that the lead kid is actually really strong, because he acts like an actual kid. So I felt very connected to Mowgli, even though he lives a life that I could never understand.
That kid's face and his eyes. It's like, he doesn't have to say anything at all. And something about his expressions and his eyes in particular kind of just like pull you in and make you identify with him. I was very surprised about this too. You know what's really cool about where I saw it? Because I was too late to the screening game here. I went to an AMC Prime Theater, which has like a super big screen and the lounge chairs.
That's where we saw it, New York.
It's got
Perry,
the most.
Okay, so for those of you that don't know what Perry's talking about, she actually just moved to Los Angeles. We will still be doing the podcast. Yeah. We're just doing it in different time zones. But that's amazing because we also saw it in an AMC Prime, but here in New York.
But the sound in this was like nothing I've ever heard before. And with the visuals and the way that this movie was shot and the way that it sounds, like, I mean, down to, you know, the pitter patter that happens when animals step on grass. I mean, it sounds really silly when I say it like that, but the body movement and the way their hair rustles, it's all represented in the sound design, and it's incredible. And that's kind of what really pulls everything together and makes it all so immersive.
I mean, I think that one thing that I was really impressed by, so one thing, you know, we watch a lot of CG movies where, you know, there's CG people and animals doing things. And the one thing that I feel like so many of them get wrong is like the weight of the bodies that are moving. Totally. And like the counterweight of the ground as like the people are pressing against it. And it's something that in so many movies that otherwise look good in still images has kind of thrown me off. And this movie does that really, really well. I do think that the marketing has just kind of like undersold this movie, because even after I watched it and was really impressed by it, I watched the trailer again today on my computer, and it cannot do justice to, like, you know, the experience of watching it on the big screen, which is a shame. So I'm hoping that word of mouth will get more people to see it in theaters. I honestly think, you know, this is up there with, like, Avatar or, like, Life of Pi or, like, Gravity as something that you really
I'm
need
so
to see
sick of
theater.
Talking about Avatar.
I know.
We need to not reference
like
Avatar.
When Avatar came out and we were all like, okay, it's a CG movie, it's all 3D, okay, whatever, the trailer looks shitty. And then I went and saw it, and it's not like I thought that was a great movie, but, like, just, like, the experience of like being there and watching this magical world unfold in front of you in like this way that looks so realistic that you almost can't believe. It's like, I mean, I know I've seen the set photos for The Jungle Book, and it's all green screen, and I'm looking for the seams, and I can't find any, and it's like,
yeah, I got home and I started researching how they did this, because I couldn't accept that these animals were all CGI. They just looked too real. And, like, they're all CGI. It's insane. It's, like, when you watch, you can go online and see some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, and it's, like, literally, they have, like, one prop log, and this kid in his little red undies running around on this one prop log surrounded by green, and then they're, like, and then we did this. And it's just, it's insane. And I also want to say the voice cast in this, because we haven't gotten to that yet, is phenomenal. Like,
Idris Elba.
Yeah, I said in my review, I'll say it again, Idris Elba defines himself. He makes Shere Khan one of the best Disney villains. And, like, I was not super into The Jungle Book as a kid. It just didn't really connect to me the same way the other stories did. But, like, here, it's just, Elba has this way with his voice where he kind of creates a world. And there's, like, one scene in particular where he lays out this threat really subtly and horrifyingly, and I was just really taken. And then, like, I think Scarlett Johansson is amazing as Ka. They gender swap the snake that can mesmerize. And she, like, does this whole thing. And that really worked for
did
me.
Did you guys there's stay so through much the credits?
Yeah.
The
burlesque
her?
Song is amazing. Like, I call it a burlesque number because it's, like, at the end, it's like she's singing this sexy, like, man.
I was wondering if that was really her singing.
As far as
oh,
I
yeah,
can tell,
she released
it
an
sounds
album.
Exactly like her.
Angie and I had a long conversation about Scarlett Johansson's hipster album. but, like, Then Ben Kingsley is really amazing, and Bill Murray is Baloo.
Oh my god,
it, like,
I love Bill
so
Murray.
Makes so much sense the way these actors' voices give a life and like a fullness to this story. That as a kid I never got that into, but like here I understood who Mowgli was. I understood his family. I understood why he didn't want to leave the jungle, and I cried in this movie. I threw myself back in my seat because the sound of, like Perry said, there's like one part where the animals like go to war and the sound effects in it were so violent.
Isn't it crazy that just 5-6 years ago we were getting live action CG hybrids like Marmaduke?
Wow. Look,
and
there's
now
still a lot of
shitty
CG
this.
Coming out, so let's not pretend
not
like now
I
like Jungle
well,
Book is
like,
good.
Because what was incredible to me is that we've come from Life of Pi to this so quickly. Like, Life of Pi was just a couple of years ago, and
it
at
was
the time
really
that was
remarkable at the time. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But it's like they had one line, like one tiger to create. This is, they said in one of the things I listened to, they had over 800 visual effects artists working for a year to create the hundreds of animals in this movie. And I mean, just the way their fur moves, the way the light works on them, it's astonishing.
And the shot composition, too. It's every single frame in this movie you could pause, and it's a beautiful image. So, you know, kudos to Jon Favreau for taking all this hard work that these people put into this movie and framing it right and really bringing the most out of everything. It's just, it's so well lit, so well shot. Every single camera movement really supports all the beats of the story. It's every element of this production comes together so well, and I think that's the only way a film like this could work.
I think that, I mean, this is a movie that if you're planning on watching it at all, ever, just go out and buy a 3D ticket and watch it in theaters right now. Because, I mean, it's still going to be fun if you watch it at home, but it's not going to be the same. That said, I do think that, like, you know, I feel like if I watch it at home, I'd still like it. Because I think I also have to credit Jon Favreau and his screenwriter, Justin Marks, for, like, really putting a lot of heart and thought into the story. Like, it's a pretty simple tale. It's just about, like, Mowgli growing up. But, you know, basically what it becomes is just, like, this journey of self-discovery where he kind of needs to figure out who he is and how he fits into this world. And it becomes actually, like, especially toward the end, it becomes really poignant, because as a human, he is just kind of inherently set apart from this world that he grew up in. And then he has some really tough choices to make about, like, what kind of person he wants to grow up to be and, like, where he wants to find his home. And Idris Elba's Shere Khan.
It's a message about identity.
Yeah, but Idris Elba's Shere Khan is another one where his performance is fantastic, the animation is fantastic, but one of the other things that makes the villain kind of so, like, compelling and so dangerous is that you see how personal this is for him, and you see, like, you completely see where it's coming from and understand what he's willing to, like, do to get what he wants.
Did we talk about Christopher Walken? Because I got the biggest kick out of his scene.
I thought he was really distracting.
Really? Oh my god, I loved it.
Scarlett Johansson was distracting, honestly. Like,
yeah,
I'm like, okay,
if anything, I would
fine,
say that about Scarlett, like, Johansson.
I was like, I feel like I'm watching a video of a snake and then Scarlett Johansson talking over it, which is essentially what this whole movie is, but the other one's kind of, like, I was able to
that's
believe
interesting.
It more.
For me,
like,
Walken
maybe if we
stuff, like, when he starts speak singing, I want to be like you,
it.
I was just like, I felt like I had stepped into a different movie. It just, I don't know, maybe I was having Peter Pan Live flashbacks. Like, I like Walken a lot, but the dude doesn't sing. He's just like, I want
to
be like
you.
Like, what's happening?
What was it? The movie that just came out on demand where he's singing, like, One More Day or something with Amber Heard?
Amber Heard one?
I don't know.
Last Day or something?
Not to steer off course here, but he sings in that movie, and it's supposed to be a scene where it's like, oh my god, he's so great, he wrote this incredible song, it's so bad, and it breaks my heart, I feel bad for him acting in that scene.
I'm a big Walken fan, but I just felt like in this he feels out of place. Like, I feel like, I don't know, I think it's, like, too much to have Bill Murray and him in the same, like, in this movie, because they both are just such big presences that it feels awkward all of a sudden, but the rest of it I was really into.
I think to me kind of the problem was that, like, I get why they wanted to include the songs. It's such an iconic part of the original, and it's like, if you remember anything about the original, like, you know, the animated movie, it's those two fucking songs. So, like, I understand why they wanted it in there. But the thing is, this whole movie is kind of like, it feels kind of gritty and naturalistic in a way that the original didn't. I mean, that's a huge part of its selling point, because you really feel like you're there. So, like, the songs feel kind of shoehorned in, and the movie, and you can tell the movie kind of knows that, because they're not full-on musical numbers, they're just sort of, like, Walken sing speaking, and they're sort of, like, Baloo kind of, like, do-do-do-do-do, you know, like.
Baloo's didn't totally bother me, because it's, like, like you said, they don't really take the time to make it a full musical number, it's just kind of, like, the two of them singing it while they're hanging out.
But I feel like, especially, like, Baloo, at least, it's, like, you're just, like, okay, so he's a guy who's singing. Some people just break on a song in real life. It's annoying, but they do it. But, like, Christopher Walken's one especially just
look, Angie,
felt like
sometimes
they were,
like, I like to sing. You don't have to make a thing about it.
But, like, Christopher Walken's number especially kind of just felt like everyone was like, well, guess we got to do this now. All right, you ready? Like, it just, it
felt that,
like,
part felt funky to me. But by and large, I really thought this was amazing, and I think If you're interested in seeing, actually, honestly, screw
were,
it. Even
were
if you're
there
not
any
interested
kids
in seeing
your screening?
You,
were there children in your screening?
Not near us.
No, I'm just wondering.
They were
wondering
there,
but
they weren't near us. Yeah,
it's very dark and violent. So I'm just wondering how young kids would react.
Yeah, I don't know how old a kid should be to see it, because I think you have to you know your kids a bit. I'd be curious to see what some of the critics we know who have kids want to say as far as the rating on this. But then again, like, I don't know, man. Dark Crystal was one of my favorite movies. Secret Nim was one of my favorite movies. And they were incredibly violent, scary movies for kids. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm not the best person to ask. But I do think that even if you're only like mildly interested, you should see this because it's one of those movies that if you don't experience it on the full screen, you're not totally experiencing it. And do the 3D if you get you have AMC Prime. As much as I'm annoyed with them about the stupid texting thing, AMC Prime is the way to go.
Well, I didn't see it in 3D, but I did see it in Prime, and I'll tell you, it's well worth seeing this on a big screen. With 3D? No.
That's so sad. The 3D is actually really good because it kind of, instead of having things fly at you, it adds depth. So you kind of just feel like you're looking out a window at shit that is happening like a foot in front of your face. It's amazing.
Well, it really gives a sense. It speaks to how good the movie is. Now that you're saying that, I really wouldn't mind going back and seeing this again just so I could see it in 3D.
I kind of want to drag my husband,
You really should. It's a really enjoyable movie that I was never that into The Jungle Book either, but there's something about just the magic of this movie that rekindles the love for animated Disney movie, the original classics at least, period. And just the simplicity of the story and the importance of the characters and their journey and what happens to them. I mean, this is really a well-done movie. The only thing that's throwing me right now is what the hell are they going to do with Jungle Book 2?
Oh, fuck. I forgot that they already said that. Yeah.
Well, they made an animated one, but I didn't watch it.
Oh, really? I've never seen it
either. Maybe Jungle Book 2 would be about men coming into the jungle and how Mowgli has to handle that.
Maybe. I don't know.
I'd be curious to see that, I guess. I don't know.
But maybe I'm excited. Maybe it'll be like
when Jon Favreau directed Iron Man and then we loved it and then he made Iron Man 2 and we were like, oh, he tried to set up a universe and it was not a good idea. Jungle Book universe.
I like how you say his name.
A live action MCU.
Christy, say the director's name.
Jon Favreau?
Does everybody say Favreau?
What do you say?
Jon Favreau.
I don't know how I say it now.
I definitely don't say Jon Favreau.
Favreau. I don't know what I said anymore.
I say Jon Favreau.
Mr. John, whatever your last name is, if you're listening, call us and let us know how to say your name.
We've definitely hit the point where we've said his name so many times that every way feels wrong.
It has to be right somewhere in there. But yeah, John, if you listen to our podcast, as someone whose last name gets mispronounced all the time, it's Puchko. Do feel free to weigh in. We have occasionally had people let us know when we've pronounced their names wrong, and that happens.
All right.
I appreciate it. I want to know. I want to know feel free to correct me.
I'm curious, too. Any last words on Jungle Book other than we love it and you should go see it in the best format possible?
I think that's it, man.
No? All right.
That's awesome.
So that's it. We've had a good week this week. Look at this. Two great new movies for you to see. So get at it. Go. It's a whole weekend ahead of you. So that is a wrap on episode 110 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You know where to find us. iTunes would be great, where you can subscribe, comment, rate. Then we have our website, popcornprosecco.com. Follow us on Twitter at popcornprosecco. And please like us on our Facebook page as well. All three of us are all over the internet, too. Christy, do you want to go first?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko. That's KRISTYPUCHKO. And I write all over the web, but you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I am at slashfilm.com.
And you can find my writing on collider.com, and my Twitter handle is pnemiroff. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Come on, Baggy, get with the beat. The bare necessities of life will come to you.
They'll come to me.
They'll come to you.